Hi, everybody. I'm Sterling Holmes. I'm an alcoholic. Ooh, can y'all hear me? All right. Through God's grace, this program and sponsorship, I have not found it necessary to take a drink since the 2nd of June, 1981. And for that, I am truly, truly, truly grateful. I am grateful to be here. Thank you for having me out, Popeye, and the committee for asking me to come out to Maryland. Out here on the tip of Maryland, seems like to me. It's nice being on the Atlantic Ocean. I'm from Omaha, Nebraska. We don't have a whole lot of oceans out there in the middle of Nebraska. So I'm really pleased to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me and Roxanne out. It's been great, even though it's been wet. That's okay. I stand before you somewhat wet, but totally dry. Thank you very much. And I appreciate all you coming out in the elements to come here, and I know that there's a game on, so those of you that are making the supreme sacrifice tonight, your reward will be in heaven, okay? If you thank me after this, I'll tell you what team I favor, okay? We don't talk about outside issues at the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm here tonight to share my experience, strength, and hope, and I'm really grateful for that opportunity because, as Truck said, AA does work. Let me tell you, if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, just by show of hands, how many people, this is the first time in sessions? All right, look at that. Isn't that great? These weekends are the icing on the cake. The part and parcel work of Alcoholics Anonymous is done Monday through Friday or Saturday and Sundays in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. But every once in a while, you get these things together, every annuals, and you celebrate something that is special. Something that is so powerful it gets all of us in the same room without beating each other up. And that is amazing, because there are a lot of people in here who would not mix. I'm one of them. Because when I first started out, there were two groups in my life, me and all y'all. My full name is Sterling David Holmes III. Isn't that something? Now, in history, when you have a Roman numeral at the end of your name, you're supposed to get a country to run. Louis XIV, George III. I'm Sterling III. I'm waiting for my country. Instead, I got a little sister moved in my room. Pissed me off. So I'm born of resentment. I grew up in New York. Tragic, isn't it? From South Bronx. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with growing up in New York. I went to a Catholic school all the way up to my first year of college. Nothing wrong with that. I don't have a problem with the Catholic doctrine. Some of the nuns that taught it to me weren't wrapped too tight. But in the big book, it's 12 and 12. See, I get my books mixed up. 12 and 12 says that we like to be called precocious, which is a nice way of saying asshole. Because at that, I remember in the first, I think it was the first or second grade, I asked this nun, I raised my hand and said, "Sister, how can you have a virgin birth?" And she was not prepared to discuss that profound theological concept with an 8-year-old. So she hit me and sent me to the principal. And while I was sitting there waiting for the principal to come hit me some more, I realized I didn't trust you all. I haven't drank yet, but already. See, I'm the kind of kid that needed sponsorship in kindergarten. Make the phone call. You know, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? Eat the cookie, take the nap. That's all you got to do. That's all you got to do. But that's the kind of person, I'm not wrapped too tight. So when Trump was talking about insanity, yeah, from the word go, I have a lot of old ideas. And my best thinking got me into Alcoholics Anonymous. My best stuff, the best stuff I was bringing to the table is what got me here. So if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous and you're sitting in this room wondering what is it that you have in common with all these other nutcases that are walking around here, that's it. There is something seriously wrong with you. And we know what it is. And we're going to help you. So. But, I mean, it was evident. It wasn't evident to anybody in my circle. I mean, throughout the school, throughout all of the experiences that I had. I mean, at 16, I drank to a point where I was suffering from mild alcohol poisoning. And I blamed the experience on bad onion dip. Because when I took that tall can of Coke 45 at 13 years old, and a summer's day in the South Bronx, my perception of my world changed. The world did not change, but my perception of the world changed. See, I felt, to the depth of my soul, I felt like I could speak as well as Jesse Jackson, play sports as well as Reggie Jackson, and dance as well as Michael Jackson. You know, and if it was working today, if it was working today, I'd be out tonight, moonwalking down that rainy street. But it stopped working. And here's the deal. I couldn't stop working it. It stopped working. I couldn't stop working it. It was still my solution. It's number one on my hit parade of solutions to do in my life. Drink. To hell with it. Drink. Drink. Just drink. Just drink. And now, today, it is still on the list after so many years of sobriety, but it's way down on the list. And if I keep doing the stuff that I'm supposed to do in order to stay sober and happy, joyous, and free, it'll stay down on that list. But if I stop doing that stuff, it starts moving up with a bullet, Jack. And when it becomes the number one answer, it could be a bad traffic light or popping a shoelace or somebody saying the wrong thing to me like hello, and I'm off to the races. Because I'm an alcoholic, and I'm going to be an alcoholic till the day I die. When I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous, they talked about the pickle and the cucumber. You know, and it was them people. They were very wise back then. Because they talked to me about stuff I could understand, because I'm very educated. So you have to talk to me in real simple terms. So I've been to four different colleges, don't have a degree in any of them. So I'm smart. And they gave me a bookmark that said KISS. And this is my first year of sobriety. This is how self-centered I was. I thought it meant keep it simple, Sterling. Somebody had to explain that to me later. I was really upset, too. But, I mean, throughout most of my scholastic career, I drank, I abused alcohol, and I thought it was my solution. I felt like it was my solution. It gave me the capability to be able to deal with all of you. And of course I got in trouble, even as a kid, but I always sidestepped it with some feeble excuse about the circumstances or the situation. And of course, if you're going to do alcoholism well, I think you have to do a couple of things. I think you have to have an income. You have to have a place to crash, and you got to have, you got to be able to lie. You know? And I had them all locked in. Now the income don't have to be yours. And the place to crash don't have to be yours. So those things are tangible. But you got to learn how to lie. You got to learn how to lie really well. So well that you believe it yourself. And that is why we cannot differentiate between the real and the unreal when we walk in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I told myself so much stuff that wasn't true till the point where I believed it so that I could tell you, so that you would believe it. And that was the way my process was going, even though the alcohol went up and down, that process continued. And that's what I brought into the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I always wanted to join a gang in the South Bronx. In the South Bronx, they had a lot of gangs during the 60s and 70s. And, you know, and the thing is, I wanted to join a gang, and none of the kids in my neighborhood, because I was going to these good schools and my parents had spent a lot of money trying to give me a good education, they wouldn't allow me to destroy my life like that. See, I had friends that were gang members that were high up in those gang hierarchies, and they wouldn't allow me to join because I had a chance of getting out of that neighborhood. That was the interesting about the gang dynamic back then. So if I wanted to destroy my life, I was going to have to do it by my own hand. So I decided to join a big gang, the Department of Defense. See, because when the Department of Defense goes to a gang fight, they bring nuclear weapons. Somebody's going to get hurt. So I raised my right hand, and I joined the United States Air Force. Now, the Air Force didn't know I was a chronic alcoholic, even though I was well on my way by then. They didn't wrestle me to the ground and pour Jack Daniels down my throat that day either. They thought they were getting a reasonably intelligent young man to train and send all over the world. I didn't know I had alcoholism. My parents didn't know I had alcoholism. Nobody knew I had alcoholism. My mother was a narcotics officer. Yeah, I know, maybe real popular in the neighborhood, let me tell you. But she didn't know I had alcoholism. But she knew I had a problem with drinking. And this is the interesting thing. Every once in a while, my mom would drink. She had her challenges in life. She had her disappointments. And she'd play those old, you know, the old R&B, heart-wrenching, bluesy kind of, you know, Otis Redding, Gladys Knight and the Pips, and, ooh, you know, over and over and over, Marvin Gaye. And they'll play these records. Oh, yeah, for the newcomer, records were a little black disc that we put a needle on it, and it made music. she would play these things, and I would come home sometimes, and she'd be passed out on the floor, and I'd put her to bed and turn the thing off, and I'd just say, I'd never do that, and I never did. I passed out on the couch, and I played Earth, Wind, and Fire records. It's a completely different thing. But Mom never said to me that she intimated to me or anybody in my family that she was an alcoholic. She never went to near an AA meeting. So I can't call her an alcoholic. She's gone on to the big wherever she's at. And the deal is, since I can't call her one, I can't be an adult child of one either. I can only pretend to be an adult that tends to be childish. And that's who I am and who and what I am. So Mom, you know, wasn't my problem, wasn't my drinking problem. As my drinking progressed, I decided to join that big gang and join the United States Air Force. And I got in some trouble, of course. If you're an alcoholic, you can't do the things that most other people do, like go to work, tend your children, show up where you say you're going to be, that kind of stuff. Alcohol always gets in the way. It's a rapacious creditor. It takes everything. And that's what it was doing for me. So I was starting to get in trouble in the military. And I was blaming it on a lot of other things, but you know how selfish, chronically selfish, self-centered, crazy, in their own head kind of people like to think about stuff? We get it a little weird. We get it a little twisted. See, I thought that since I was so selfish and self-centered, the best thing for me to do was to get a relationship. See, I wanted to find somebody to help me love me. So I found the object of my obsession. I locked on. Target acquisition, and I was relentless, Jack. I mean, really, you know? And I can tell you that there's a whole group of people that when we lock on, they do too. I thought it was us chasing, but I'm not so sure we're doing all the chasing. But I think they're starting to pop lame. You know how a good hunter always goes for the weak and the wounded, you know? And I think that's what they pretend to be so they get caught, because I found the object of my obsession, and she said yes, and we got married, and we went overseas, and I had a baby. You know, the 2nd of June, 1981, just before we went over, the 5th of March, 1980, she was born. Before I got overseas, though, a terrible thing happened to my mom. She got hit by a car and put in a coma. And about 2.5 weeks into that coma, she succumbed, and she died on the 2nd of September, 1978. And that started the last 2 to 3 years of my drinking, the real chronic drinking, the drinking that was ugly, the drinking that wasn't fun, the drinking that was continuous, the drinking that was destructive, the drinking that I was doing and wasn't willing to give up. That's important, newcomer. The drinking was a problem. It was a problem to everybody, including me, and I was not willing to give it up. Because it was still, with all of its problems, my only solution. Now, those of us who are in Alcoholics Anonymous for a little while, remember, we have to remember that when those people walk in the door and ask us for help, we're asking them to give something up that they have made their best and dearest friend. And that is a heck of a sacrifice to do on your word alone. If this program wasn't so compelling, we wouldn't be here, newcomer. Because all of us came in here feeling exactly the way you feel right now. And I can tell you, this thing works. Because I'm convinced that I would not be here before if it weren't for Alcoholics Anonymous. They told me to make a trade, and I've traded up. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous has saved my life. Now, it didn't seem that way. Because I was stationed in northern Japan. And in Japan, they drive on the wrong side of the road. I'd get so drunk some nights, I couldn't remember what side of the road I was supposed to be on. So I'd drive down the middle. When you do that, they react. They do. I mean, because you're a hazard to yourself and others. There was an old timer in California who told me that you affect at least 7 other people with your alcoholism, and that's at least how many people should be affected by your sobriety. You know, and the deal was, I was affecting a lot of folks. The family wasn't happy. And I wasn't happy, and the people I was working with wasn't happy, so they decided to send me to group. Now, you know how it is when you go to group. We all sat around group one another, talking about our disease. And Monday through Friday, I was fine. I was an alcoholic who was not drinking. So you know I was spreading warmth and sunshine everywhere I went. Just lovely to be around. For Friday nights would come, and I'd have a little bit of that funny money in Japan, and I wanted to take my kid and my wife out for a little dinner, and I'd stop by the club, and you know when you stop by the club, you gotta go see your friends. These guys were like, 30, look 50, and I'd spend thousands of dollars on them trying to make them my oldest and dearest friends, and I couldn't remember their names, but, and they were sitting around telling Vietnam stories, and I'd sit around, drink a Coke, and listen to the Vietnam stories, and Then I'd have another Coke and listen to some Vietnam stories, and I'd have rum and Coke, and I'd start telling some Vietnam stories. I joined in 77, it was over. Then I'd forget where I was, and then I'd lose my car. I remember reporting my car stolen one time, and it was the only car in the parking lot at the time. And I'm going to tell you, normies take a very dim view of that kind of stuff. You can't find it. You can't drive it. They wouldn't let me drive it home after I found it. So needless to say, they thought that there was something wrong with Sterling, 23 years old, and having problems associated with chronic alcoholism. So they decided to send me to group, and, you know, I wasn't doing very well in group, so they decided to intensify my treatment. They decided to send me to treatment. And I went to treatment in the Philippines. I don't know if there's any ex-military out here, but treatment, Philippines is an interesting place. At the time when I went, beer was like 15 cents. You could go out into, outside of the base and explore every demented fantasy you ever came up with $5 and come home with change and a few diseases. Needless to say, I didn't think that this was going to bode well for this young and coming alcoholic. Now, the thing was, this alcohol recovery center that they sent me to had seen a couple of drunks before I showed up. And they stayed on my butt, and in 40-something days, they taught me everything you need to know about alcoholism. All of the films, every Father Martin movie I ever saw, I saw on treatment. The Jelly Neck Chart of Recovery, Disease and Recovery, and the Cirrhotic Livers, I'll Quit Tomorrow, and Days of Wine and Roses, and all of that. I mean, I felt so sorry for you alcoholics. I was going to make a donation when I got back to the base. But I graduated most likely to drink 6 months out of there. And it would have been a unanimous vote if I had voted. There was 12 of us, 12 angry men, I like to call us. It would have been the landslide victory for yours truly. To my knowledge, I don't think anybody else out of that group stayed sober. But I got to a little group that had something similar to this. They had that little circle and triangle. Back in the day, we just had the circle and triangle. We didn't put AA on it. And it was right next to the rec center, across the street from the NCO club. And I went in there, and I walked in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous for the very first time. I saw a couple of pictures, two white guys talking to this one guy on the bed, a bunch of people smiling, you know, couch, coffee, guy named Jim, always a guy named Jim. Hi, how you doing? You know, that kind of thing. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Hi, how you doing? You want to have a cup of coffee? Want to sit down? Hey, hi, how you doing? You know? That's what I got when I first walked in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, what was interesting is you started with a prayer, you ended with a prayer, and you passed the basket. So I know what this is. This is a cult. Y'all going to try to jump me to Jesus. Or make me shave my head and sell books at the airport. I know that. That's what's up. See, because I knew all about God. I quit being a Catholic after the 5th, 6th grade, was an atheist for a little while, practiced Islam for a little bit, Yoruba. You know, at one time, I joined this Baptist choir because this girl was in this Baptist choir and I wanted what she had and I was willing to go to any lengths to get it. So I joined this Baptist choir. So on any given Sunday, I was a failed Catholic who was a practicing Muslim singing in a Baptist choir in a Methodist church. So, you know, I mean, I knew all there was to know about God. So when y'all started doing the prayer and ended with a prayer, starting with a prayer and ended with, I figured you had a building fund or you're going to be sending missionaries to Africa or something, you know? And I was waiting for you to do the hard sell. And what I got instead, this is what's important, newcomers, what I got instead was people who had an understanding of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and how it related to the solutions to the problems of their life. Now, everybody in the world has problems. And there are meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous that go in depth and extensive about the problem. But the deal is, there's only a small portion of our book that talks about the problem. The rest of it involves a solution. And thank God that I walked into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous where people were embracing the solution and they were able to share it with me freely and intimately and specifically from their point of view. Because that's what I found here that attracted me to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was what you said. It really was what you said. But it was how you said it and what you had to say as a result. What had changed. What it's like now. That really made an impression on me. Even though I didn't realize it. Because I liked you, but I wasn't sure I trusted you. Thank God that group was also cunning, baffling, and powerful. They knew how to trick me into doing stuff I didn't want to do. They said, well, you know, we need a coffee maker. So, Sterling, we'd love for you to help us make coffee.
Sure thing, anything for you fine people. I'll do it, no problem. Yes.
So they gave me the key, and I got the key. I got the key. Drunks could die if I don't make the coffee. So I'm getting there 2 hours early. Tell you, I'm getting there 2 hours early. You know how the pots are. There are a lot of ex-coffee makers in here. I know. You know how the pots are. So I figured 15, 16 people going to this meet, 15, 16 of them cap things to do it, you know? See? Starbucks ain't got nothing on me. I was ahead of my time. They were drinking. For 2 weeks, they drank that bad coffee. Using a lot of cream. People's eyes closing when they drinking it. It's just 2 weeks. Thank you, Sterling, you know. We got the circle, say the prayer, want another volunteer for coffee maker. 3-4 people volunteered, you know. Okay. You can't get thrown out of here. If you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, you can't get thrown out of here. I don't care how weird you are. An old timer told me there's a wrench for every nut in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it is true. There is somebody in here who is either weirder or more loving. I mean, you just ain't going to get thrown out. Welcome. Resistance is futile. You're in. Done. The deal was those people loved me. And they taught me everything they could in that year. And I came back to the States a year sober and on fire about Alcoholics Anonymous. I truly loved the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Had a small problem. Just a small problem. Just wasn't enough black people in AA. You know, I was going to dedicate my life to getting thousands of black folks in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I wanted another picture up on that wall. See? Bill, Bob, Sterling. I'll rewrite the book later. Came back. My first wife was from Washington, D.C., so we languished in Washington, D.C. while I was waiting for my next assignment. Went to a meeting, and I'm not sure where it was, to be honest with you. I really don't. But it seemed to me like there were thousands of black people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Many of them sober longer than me, which pissed me off. I'd like to tell you that the first 5 years of my recovery were stellar, that I got right back to the States and jumped in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. That wasn't true. I did do one thing, however. I went to a lot of meetings. I went to meetings for all the wrong reasons, but I went to meetings. I went to meetings. And that's what saved my butt, because at about 5 years of sobriety, I was crazy. I was pissed off at you and pissed off at me and pissed off at the world, pissed off at God and pissed off about the program, but wasn't willing to drink, but was thinking about killing myself or getting a sponsor. Equally tragic decisions as far as I was concerned. I decided I'd go with the sponsor thing because I could always kill myself later. And my God, with a sense of humor, sent me to Omaha, Nebraska. Doesn't sound like AA Mecca, but in fact it was for me. I met a lot of people. When I walked down the stairs of that for the very first time to go to my home group, which is Foxhall Group, I encountered the same thing I got the very first time I walked into AA. Hi, how you doing? Welcome to I got that enthusiasm. I got the people who were happy about being sober because they had intimate knowledge of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, how to apply it in their lives, and they had yielded solutions as a result of application of the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. That was it. These people had results, and they were happy about the results they were getting, therefore they were enthusiastic. And the deal was, what happened to me, I wasn't happy because I wasn't putting this program in my home. I wasn't working this thing in all my affairs. I was just doing the two-step mambo. You know what it's about. Keep coming back. I'm glad to be here, you know. Going to the dances and having a good time. But I wasn't putting in the work. And I got desperate enough to find somebody who could help me. If you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I know that you think everything in your brain might not be right, but you don't want to tell nobody. This is what I want you to do. If you ever get a crazy thought in your head, do this. Find an old timer. They ain't got nothing else to do. Find an old timer. Tell them the crazy thought. They'll ask you a series of questions. And they may help you solve that crazy, because you got a lot more crazy thinking to do. I had some coming here. So the thing is that you get that out of the way. Get it out of the way now. And that was the thing I had to do. I had to find somebody who I could tell all of the stuff in my head that I swore I would never tell anybody. And I found a man that was able to help me through that. And that he was able to help me work the rest of those steps. He was able to help me learn how to be a man in my home. You know that I had to learn how to shut up in my house? I had to learn how to, you know, let her be her. Now, I thought I was supposed to be pointing out her character defects, because after all, I'm an AA. I left enough Al-Anon literature around my house to fix anybody, but never once asked her if she had a God, if she had a power greater than herself that was restoring her to sanity, not on my timetable, but on his. And in fact, I guess she did, because after about 11 years sober, she gave me the interesting news that she no longer wanted to be married to me. And I'm going to tell you, that was a crushing blow, because I'd almost had the AA brass ring. I'd gotten an award for my job in the military, and I was doing well. I was over 10 years sober, thank you very much. And then how she drops this bomb on me, I was mortified, because I had imagined that I would be doing something like this, and I'd be able to point down to the audience and have her stand up, and they all go, isn't it wonderful they're still married, you know? That wasn't going to happen now. And she was taking my daughter with her, which really upset me. Because I hadn't been the best dad in the world. All that time that I spent sober, I just was so involved with me that I ain't have time for you. Trying to think about me and how to fix me and how to get over me and all that me. And I didn't have any time for you. And I definitely didn't have any time for her. And she was taking that girl with her. And I was mortified and I was crushed. Now, you would think that a person with that kind of emotional upheaval would get some sympathy in their home group, right? I had a member, one of my more austere members, roll up to me and put his arm around me and said, you know, it's really nice we have the only man ever to get a divorce in Alcoholics Anonymous. So needless to say, I had to get back to work. You know, I had to learn how to do that inventory that relationship, and vow not to do that again. Vow to take my side of the street, look at it, and own it, and humbly ask God to help me not do that again, not to repeat that same behavior. And, you know, God, with a sense of humor, put another person in my life. He also did something else for me. I was working hard and in the military, but I also got an opportunity to do television. I was a weather forecaster in the Air Force. And there was a television station that needed a weather guy part-time, and I got a chance to do some television weather work. So I was on TV three or four times a night, you know, a week on a channel, one of the independent channels. And he's like, hi, how you doing, Parley Collie kind of thing. You know, that was good. That was real fun. Now, I also met a young lady, and we started dating. So, you know, now everything is starting to come back together again. I'm in AA. I'm sponsoring guys. I'm doing service work. I'm on television. I've got a good job in the military. You know, I'm like, hey, how you doing? I'm pretty cool. And the Air Force had a new job. They decided they wanted to send me west. I didn't want to go. But they said, well, you got to go to Sacramento, California. I said, okay. Because I had this thought, you know, because I'm liable to do that from time to time, have a thought. If you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, don't do that. Go to me. But I had these thoughts. And I thought to myself that maybe there are some people that could use my help in Sacramento, California. So I decided I was going to pack up my little Nissan Stanza that was paid for. I was going to roll over the Rocky Mountains, come out of Reno, and come into Sacramento and help everybody. Well, God had a sense of humor. He broke that Nissan Stanza down in Cheyenne, Wyoming. I found three things: a La Quinta station, an AMCO station for the La Quinta Hotel, an AMCO station for the car, and right at the end of Main Street by the Pizza Hut, there's this little Quonset hut. There was AA, you know, Alano Club, basically. Walked in there, pictured them two old white guys. Guy named Jim, always a guy named Jim. Big old orange ashtrays, you know, the big old orange ashtrays, you know? Holds a carton of cigarettes, doesn't it? So I spent a couple of days there, and then I got back to Sacramento. And in Sacramento, from my sponsor, I had the numbers of three individuals who were active, who were motivated and working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in Sacramento, California. I had three numbers. Now, anybody with over 11 years of sobriety would have gotten there, and as soon as they got there, would have called these numbers and gotten in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Something happened to me. Fear. And I'm going to tell you something. If you're new or you're old in Alcoholics Anonymous, fear will eliminate whatever you've done, because you're going to stand still with fear unless you put another step. Unless you take another step through the fear, you're going to stop. However good you was up until you got scared, it's over. Because fear made me stop. And I sat there and I listened to these people talking these meetings, and I started judging them, and I started getting angry, irritable, and discontented with the way they ran AA in Sacramento, California, for Christ's sake. This is blasphemy, half the things they're doing around here. Getting it all wrong, for Christ's sake. And I was getting madder and madder and madder. And the thing is, God had a sense of humor. He gave me a guy that called me up one day that he threatened to commit suicide. So I told him, hang up. He said, why? I said, because I don't want you to die and stand on the line. I can't call the cops. Well, before you die, why don't I take you to a meeting? And that guy, I don't know where he is today, but he brought me back into the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's the safest place, newcomer, in the world for a person like me. In the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because if I'm sitting right back smack dab in the middle, what will happen is somebody will walk up to me and ask me to do something. Or take somebody somewhere. Or give a funny ride, or do this, or whatever, or say, I got good, make coffee, or whatever. It is. That's the challenge for me, to stay in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I got a big mouth and I like to be seen. And in Sacramento, California, I worked my butt off and staying sober and doing that deal. And I got out of the Air Force and I came back home to Omaha, Nebraska, and decided to marry the girl that I was dating. You know, and the thing was, is that this was a gift. And I knew it was a gift. And I came home and anticipating that I was going to have a good life. And I have a very good life in Omaha, Nebraska. But this woman and I had to do things a little differently. You know, I had to allow her to be sponsored by someone other than me. And I had to keep my sponsor. And we were going to have to learn how to stay on our side of the street. And we dated through, like, roundups like this. I mean, we would be there. You know, we did the AA dating thing, you know. The first time she went to a meeting with me, I stuck her with the Al-Anons, though. And she still hasn't forgiven me for that, but, you know, hey. But she is with me tonight, and I'd like for her to stand up. Roxanne, would you stand up, please? She hates it, but I don't get to do it that often, so. And I wanted to prove to y'all that I got a woman. But life was good for quite a long time. I got a new job, and I broke my leg, broke my ankle in a couple of places, and was on disability for a little while with her young son who likes rap music. And that was a test of my serenity. But that's the interesting thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, through all the life challenges. And I can tell you, the last few years have been very, very challenging. I know I've been sober over 28 years, and I would have thought that most of the real challenges had taken place in probably the first 10. But I can tell you, the last couple, 3 years have been really, really, really interesting. And I can the reason why I say that is because there sometimes in your sobriety, you will encounter a situation that will bring you to your knees. And if you don't know how to pray when you get down there, you're in serious trouble. Because when trouble comes, that is not a time to have to get a program. You better have one in place for when it gets here. Because life is on life's terms. I can tell you, for the last, well, 2 years, two, 3 years ago, I lost a great job. And I was out of work for quite some time. Just about 6 months, or about a year before that, we had gone to a roundup, and Roxanne had an exam. And when we got back from the roundup, we found out that she had a lump in her breast. And I watched her go through the treatment for breast cancer. And I can tell you that the treatment for breast cancer is sometimes more difficult than the breast cancer could be. I mean, I watched her take stuff into her body that's poisonous. And she lost her hair, and she did all of that. And the thing, I could not manage that. I was powerless over that. So what could I do? I went to meetings. And you know, when you go to meetings sometimes and you've got a lot of things going on, you know, in that part of the book it says, nothing will ensure safety from drinking than intensive work with another alcoholic, you know. So when I'm in trouble, what do I want to do? I want to go to a meeting and help somebody. Come here. Come here. Nigga, where are you? Come here. Let me help you. Here, this is big book. Come on, we're going to read this big book. I went to a lot of meetings, Jack, and I went to a lot of meetings on fire about trying to get somebody the solution of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I wanted to stay sober. And I knew that I was powerless over her disease, and I was equally powerless over my disease. And one of the things I've learned about life triggers my disease. I don't know about y'all, But light triggers, I mean, red lights trigger my disease. People with 14 items and a 12 item or less line trigger my disease. Know-it-alls trigger my disease. Bosses trigger my disease. Meetings when they ain't getting it right really trigger my disease. I mean, these things trigger my disease because I am powerless over all of those things. And I didn't realize that until she started going through her disease and I saw the dignity and the courage that she exhibited. And it reminded me of all the dignity and courage I've seen in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous when we have lost loved ones, when we have lost jobs, when we've lost careers, our profession, our livelihoods, our property, whatever it was. And you still walked in here with the courage enough to sign those cards and give the number out and show up at the commitment. And the thing is that is inspiring. And if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, you need to sit down and watch people go through painful experiences, stone cold sober, with a spiritual solution in their hands. That's the deal of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the meat and potatoes of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why we're so big on one drunk talking to another. Because when you talk to that drunk, you're going to find out some stuff you didn't know. That this person has courage, even though they are riddled with fear. That this person has serenity, even though they're up every 3 or 4 minutes getting a cup of coffee. That this person has consistency, over though, you know, they're late every time they come to the meeting. You're going to find out some things. And that is the experience of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the experience that I have had over the last 3 years. I have been given some weird guys to sponsor. I don't know. I mean, I'm really weird guys. And I don't know if I'm helping them or not. I don't know. But I know they're helping me. Because I get off the phone with them, I hang up. Sometimes I feel like I've given birth. But it's real hard to take her inventory. It's real hard for me to get all worked up about being in the supermarket. It's real hard to get through that. I mean, it's real hard to get pissed off about the red light after I have done that. Because I'm at my best when I'm here with you. I know what to do here. And I know how to do it. Because you did it to me. That's what this is all about. Newcomer, we have the disease of alcoholism. We're going to get no greater joy than to give it to you. That's how we get relief. And what really jazzes us is when we see you give it to somebody else. That's what I really love, watching this fellowship grow up around me. I've watched people go gray in my home group. That's a cool thing, watching people go gray. The complaints used to be about the parole officer, now it's about taxes. Used to be problems, you know, relationship problems. We used to be in those corners talking those relationship problems. Now we're talking about our kids and showing pictures to one another and bragging and all that. That's called life on life's terms. That's what I bought into. With all of the disease, with all of the disappointments, with all of the challenges, it is life. It is the life that I have chosen because I want to work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I want to live life on life's terms. I want a relationship with a power greater than myself that's going to restore me to the sanity that I first experienced the very first time I met you. Y'all may have acted crazy, but you were a lot saner than I was. And to this day, you still are. Because your solution still works. I'm still in my head. I'm all I think about. You know? I mean, I'm still up in here. My best ideas. You know? I listen to me way more than I listen to y'all. I ain't never had a bad idea. Never. 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 I tell my ideas to my sponsor. He comes up with these things, these gaps in my thinking that I didn't think I had. But he seems to key right in on them. I go, oh, yeah, okay. The greatest word in Alcoholics Anonymous is, oh. Really? I didn't know that. That's the stuff of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and you need somebody to tell you that stuff. That's the greatest gift that this program has given me. It has given me the ability to be able to smile from the inside out, to laugh heartily, to cry when I'm in pain, but to walk in here and to be able to look anybody in the eye. I'm a free man today. When the police car goes off behind me, I pull over because I know they don't want me. And I'm not snatching for stuff and throwing stuff out of the window and trying to get, you know. You know how that is. They see that. You know they see that? They got the light on. They see that. And you're doing all this. Yeah. I don't do that anymore. And if they pull me over, when I hand them all the paperwork, it's all mine. Everything in this car belongs to me, yeah. And nobody else, you know. That's the deal. That's the benefit. That's the benefit. When the phone rings, I don't have call wait. I don't have caller ID. I got to answer. You know, and that's the deal. That's the freedom that I have today. Now, I still have the same alcoholism I came in here with, and I'm probably going to have until the day I go in the ground. But the difference is, I have some experience with the solutions in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I implement those solutions, I get to live a happy, joyous, and free life. That's the deal. I'm not that much different than the way I was 28 years ago, other than that I've learned some new techniques. And the techniques work. They don't have to be revised. They don't have to be electronically enhanced. They don't have to be, you know, recorded or synthesized or readily adjusted for the modern times. The book was written back in the 30s. It still works today. I discovered something, that there are some stories in the back that have become a little updated, but it's basically the same old problem, and it's the same old solution. Now, I'm not worried about Alcoholics Anonymous, because Alcoholics Anonymous is filled with alcoholics. And there's nothing more, I don't know, rebellious than alcoholics. So if they change AA, there'll always be some little ragtag rebellious group that'll be doing, keeping it simple, keep coming back. And that's the kind of bunch I want to be in. I don't care how crusty they might be. I want to be in the ones that learn how to keep it simple and the ones that keep coming back. I want to be in the ones that are trying to light the fire by using the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, not only their own cleverness or their cuteness. I want to be with the ones that know how to give to other people because they're selfish and self-centered on the inside and they know it. I want to be the ones that are willing to make the commitment. I was told a long time ago by an old-timer, ham and eggs. Chicken's involved, but the pig is committed. I want to be the pig. I'm laying it on the line. I want to stay in the center of Alcoholics Anonymous. My desire has always been to be an old black man in Alcoholics Anonymous. One that you have to put in the back in the wheelchair with the teeth missing and the hair gone and all of that. You keep the newcomers away because I bite them. That's what I want to be. Because I stand a real good chance of living long enough to enjoy my grandchildren, to enjoy my life, and to enjoy the future if I hang out with you. I'm doomed if I go back to my best thinking. If you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'll tell you a little story and then I will close. Guy was trying to paint his house. And he had a 2-year-old hep in him. And when you got a 2-year-old hep in you, there's no hep. He saw a magazine that had a picture of the entire globe, all of the continents and the oceans, tore it up into pieces and told the child to go into the next room and put this puzzle together. About 5 minutes later, the child came out and said, "I'm finished." He was wondering how could have done that so fast. Well, how did you do it so quickly? Well, there was a man on the other side. I put the man together, the world comes together. See, I came in Alcoholics Anonymous with a lot of issues, a lot of problems, difficulties. You said, that's true, Sterling. Maybe the world needs to die, but for the time being, let's set all of that aside. Let's give you a God that loves you. Let's give you a program that will develop your relationship with you and that God that you can have and you can take with you wherever you go. Let's give you a place where you can go and you can talk about trying to develop that relationship and practice these principles. And then armed with that, let's go back out in the world and see if we can try to tackle those problems. That's what you've done for me. And I owe you for that. And I'm willing to do whatever Alcoholics Anonymous asks of me because of that. And I hope to God that I never forget that my best thinking brought me into Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, give this thing, I don't know, 20 and 20, 90 and 90, 100 and 250, I don't care how many. You just show up. If you show up, I would hope that you get the experience that I have. I hope you get the feeling that I have for Alcoholics Anonymous. And if not, I'll give you my number tonight. Call me up and call me a liar. I'm grateful to be here and sober. Thank you.